This is Digital Dave, and I'm joined by Mr. Steve Fulton of GE Aviation. How are you doing, Steve?
Doing well, Dave. Thank you.
Very good. Very good. And I understand you want to talk about next gen, which is a real important subject.
It is, and it's got a lot of dimensions to it, and often there's different facets that seem kind of opaque and confusing, and so we're hoping
especially
to bring some
to
clarity
little
to that.
Guys.
Well, yeah, so there's a lot of things that the little guys, as you say, I mean, I fly light airplanes as well and come up from general aviation in my background of flying. A lot of things that we're seeing now that are bringing benefit. Certainly there's navigation products, being able to access different runways using GPS that we couldn't have flown to before. But also we're enjoying ADS-B. We're getting more information with traffic around us, not just where they're at and relative altitude, but now we know who they are in terms of N number and what their track is, which is important
right.
to anticipate a
right,
future
where
position.
Going yeah. In relation to where you're going.
Yep.
And never the twain shall meet.
That's the idea. Exactly.
So what exactly is GE doing with NextGen?
There's multiple parts to NextGen, often divided up into communication, upgrading, going from the voice back and forth transmissions from a controller to the pilot to more like text messaging, digital communications back and forth. And then there's the navigation piece. Navigation has historically been ground transmitters on the ground that we tune in. Of course, GPS has bypassed that. But once we have GPS, there's a lot more that we can do other than just know precisely where we're at anywhere on the face of the earth and be able to navigate from that to another point. Now we can build more complex navigation procedures that bring a lot of benefits, and I can explain that in a minute. And then we've already talked about surveillance, which is the replacement of radar with this GPS-based automatic dependent surveillance, or
right.
ADS-B. So GE's play in this, where we're working, is in the navigation part primarily.
Okay.
So this next-gen activity, if you read, and not many people do because it's a big stack of manuals.
It's a government thing,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, but if you read the concept of operations, you'll see that at the core of this transformation of airspace operations, this upgrade of performance for airspace, at the core of that is this idea of trajectory-based operations. The idea that instead of having airplanes flying in more random, high-variance type patterns in and out of airports, we're going to put more like highways, very precise roads that airplanes will fly in and out of airports. And for air transport operations, which is a big driver of all of this because our air transportation system right now is fairly unreliable, not very predictable. Any of us who fly in the airlines have this kind of jaded, in often cases jaded, view of whether the airplane will be there on time or not and so forth. So by putting flight paths that connect the cruise portion of the flight with very precise idle power descents to the runway, and then likewise getting the airplane off the runway back up to cruise flight, solving problems on the runway surface and the airport surface, getting airplanes in and out of the gates and on the taxiways and lined up for takeoff in more efficient ways. All of these things are activities that we're involved in, all for the effort of improving the performance of the air transportation system. But something else that we have to look at as the demands continue beyond what we have already, we're going to see more and more demands coming from increasing air transport traffic, but also we're going to have unmanned aircraft competing for airspace.
Yeah, now there's a hot-button subject for many pilots.
Yeah, and it's a real concern. I mean, we've had forecasts in the past about clouds of vehicles darkening the skies, and yet here comes another one about UAVs or unmanned aircraft systems. We need to take it seriously. There's a lot of good applications, a lot of very relevant organizations that want to put vehicles up, and we can expect that they'll do so. The problem that we have in the general aviation community is we don't want to give up airspace. We don't want to have our operations impinged and more and more restrictions placed. Exactly.
Right.
So if we build the foundations properly of our future airspace and we organize the flow, starting right now, the focus, as I mentioned, is on air transport operations. Get these air transport operations working in a way that's very predictable, very precise, and then coordinate these operations with each other so that we don't have the large tactical vectors and these types of inefficient operations that we get in the terminal area. We get this more strategic, seamless, coordinated operation. We can bring in unmanned aircraft using those same principles of operation. and then have the general aviation environment maybe not as constrained as it is today. I can imagine a future where, if you look out here at our airspace, we actually have a lot. I can imagine a future where we have many more numbers of air vehicles and much less restrictions for me as a general aviation pilot being able to fly from point to point on my pleasure flight.
A couple questions jump to mind. You're going to be organizing the airspace in such a way that you can get more aircraft into the same space by making the routes more precise, more predictable, and keeping the airplanes on them. The two questions are, one, when we shift off of the ground-based controller telling the airplane to turn left heading blah, 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 what does that mean for the workload of the pilot of the aircraft? And the second question is, what happens with either a weather situation that develops or someone declares an emergency? I mean, you got to have some sort of way to get all those airplanes out of the way safely.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so let's start with the first. We have experience today of putting these predictable operations into airspace. There's a lot of successful deployments already of RNAV and the more precise, higher performance required navigation performance, or RMP. So we've got RNAV and RMP operations in many places around the world. The unanimous or almost across-the-board report, and the first thing likely you'll hear from both pilots and controllers as they experience this for the first time in a given location, is how low the workload, how much less the workload is, and how much less talking is going on. So what we're doing is we're clearing an airplane to conduct an operation that has been coordinated in advance. It's been programmed into the flight management computer database. And when the operation is cleared and the pilot's cleared to conduct this, the airplane is essentially unconstrained to do what has been pre-coordinated and pre-designed. And so there's no need for vectors, there's no need for speed commands, there's no need for all the things that we hear today with the radio chatter that we have in these busy terminal areas. So instead of more workload, instead of being more busy, we should see a lot less. So by freeing the controller up from this more routine chatter that goes on and all of that workload associated with that, we're making that controller available to do the higher value by exception things that you mentioned, like an emergency. Now, weather's a different story. Often what we have with weather is convective activity. That's a big deal. And convective activity right now, its biggest impact is often on arrival gates in and out of areas of airspace. For instance, going from the central part of the country, west coast, into the east coast, there are just a few gates that you can go through eastbound and come out of westbound. And if there's a convective cell that's on one of those gates, we start to lose significant portions of airspace capacity without it even affecting an airport. Now, by bringing in the types of improvements we're talking about with these more precise operations, airplanes flying these predetermined paths, we can put, in effect, multiple lanes, like a multiple-lane highway, through these places today where we have such a limitation. In addition to that, so that limits or minimizes the vulnerabilities that we have today with regard to these gates getting shut down. In addition to that, we have better weather products available. And the FAA talks in the next gen plan about the weather cube. It's a 4D, it's a vision of a 4D weather model. So you know a lot more about how convective activity will develop and where it's going to be at a given point in time. So you can be, again, more strategic and organize the flows in advance. There's going to be disruptions in the system, regardless of how much we do with technology. And so the human controller and the by-exception recoveries from disruptions events are still going to be part of this. What we're doing is we're going to make, first of all, the normal operations much more painless, much more efficient, much more better experience for the traveling public. And then we're going to, through technology, provide better tools to make the right decisions in the real time while these things are happening, and then make quicker recoveries when things do get tangled up. Think of a massive winter weather system that moves through the west or east coast. Airports get completely shut down for just the physical limitations of snowplow, cleaning the runway and getting air.
That.
Yeah. And so these things can't be avoided no matter how much technology we have. But what we can do is get the system put back together more quickly and in a better way to serve the traveling public.
So essentially, you're going to treat them like highways. This highway's closed. You got to turn off here, go to this airport.
Right.
And hopefully, when
and when we back. Talk, I do a lot of talking, not just to technical audiences, aviation knowledgeable audiences, but to general public. And in these discussions with people who are laymen in this business, or with respect to this business, I use those terms exactly: the highways in the sky. And this brings into people's minds a better understanding of how we can use the example of our surface transportation. Think of the interstate highway system, what we have, and the efficient movement of cars between cities, and how that has...
We could argue about how efficient that movement is, but when is this expected to be started to roll out?
Parts of it are coming out now. The FAA has got early deployments of it. For instance, ADS-B is... it's been contracted. The deployment of the infrastructure has been contracted to a supplier. It's a commercial contract. That commercial company is making great progress. I believe the commitment was to be fully deployed by December 2013, and my understanding is that it's ahead of schedule right now. So we'll have a full ADS-B network, ground network, in place at least by December 2013, maybe before. And then there's a FAA rule requiring all of us that want to fly in airspace that we need MODC transponders today to have a ADS-B out capability by 2020.
Right.
So there's going to be a lot of opportunity through that. If you look at the navigation piece again, which is what we're working on, there's multiple examples of RMP and RNAV deployments here in the country. I think for air transport people, they're seeing more and more of these procedures that bring real benefit to them. The FAA's got a lot of resources dedicated to this. GE has been contracted through a contracting funding vehicle to work on 5 airports as a third-party provider. And the idea here is to, again, engage all available resources, commercial resources in this case, to accelerate these benefits to the users of the airspace. There's certainly more of a human element to this than a technical element. The technology, even though it may seem confusing, I was talking to an audience yesterday here at one of the forums. A lot of questions, a lot of great dialogue went on for 30 minutes after the talk, and it was often about technology. But what we're asking people to do is to embrace change. And as humans, change is difficult, and it's something we don't like to do. So we naturally resist. We're taking different work groups, certainly pilots, through a transition from a very hands-on, tactical, to a more strategic, using tools, using automation to organize the flight. Same thing for controllers, going from the hands on the mic, looking at the screen, to a step back one level, let the machines talk to machines, the airplane on the ground, or the airplane with the equipment on the ground, back and forth through this communication of text messaging back and forth, coordinating the flight, and then have the controller, of course, be there to manage that and step in when there needs to be resolution of different events.
Well, we all know that their air traffic is increasing, so we got to do something.
The forecasts are pretty impressive, what the traffic will look like in the next 20, 30, 50 years. And so what we're all doing as part of this next-gen activity is building the infrastructure to support what future generations will require with airspace operations.
If I want to find out more about this, where would I go?
You can go to GE Aviation Systems website. You can go to the FAA NextGen website. You can follow me. I'm on Twitter, at CAPT Steve Fulton. And you can follow the different activities, not just here in this country, but we're working around the world, China, South Pacific, and India, and quite a bit of work underway right now down in South America. And the reason why I mention that is because these other areas are relatively low infrastructure. You know, they're rapidly developing, certainly high growths in the aviation sector. And by working to put in the modern infrastructure there, we're getting lessons learned, we're getting experience that we can bring back into our work here in this country and help ourselves. We have a much more complex system, and it's going to be a real challenge to take a very heavily invested infrastructure that we have, lots of traffic, and make this transition be successful. So we can use all the lessons learned we can get.
Well, again, thank you very much, Steve, for joining me.
You're welcome, Dave. It's my pleasure.
Where are you guys on the field here at Oshkosh?
We have a booth set up just to the south of the Centennial Square. There's a GE booth there, and you can get, if you happen to be at the show, you can get some more information from us there.
Thank you very much, sir.
Okay, Dave. My pleasure.
This is Digital Dave, and you're listening to EAA Radio.